to Wales and hockey tales with Wally. For the fans to the players living their hockey dream. To Wales and hockey tales with Wally. Can Carden, Sendoryuski, and everywhere in between.
Welcome to another episode of Two Ales and Hockey Tales with Wally. And today I am so excited to have on, again, a 53-year-old from Pontiac, Saskatchewan, Canada. His hockey journey has taken him to Canada and England, and he is most definitely in Czechia right now. He returns to the shed a legend after episode 211 has had 736 views, goals, plays, or listens. He is the founder of Retribe, a TV presenter, a commentator, a podcast host, a former pro hockey player, and a game changer. And his episode did get some of the most knee-buckling messages sent to Shed headquarters. Welcome back to the Shed, Nick Rothwell.
Hey, buddy. Thanks for having me back, dude. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah.
It's the third UK podcast that I've done this week. And
what?
I cannot thank you guys enough for all of the attention that you're bringing to the topic that I'm trying to get off the ground. Well, I am getting off the ground. You guys are just helping me.
This is the third. I'm in Canada. I'm not in the UK.
Yeah, well, you've got a UK podcast, but it's the third one that I've done this week. Yeah,
and I pull some strings over there.
Yeah, well, your buddies keep, you know, the guys at 3-on-3. I know you're talking to them and stuff like that. And yeah, like I say, I just really appreciate the airtime. I'm really grateful. Thanks a lot.
3-on-3. That's Jonathan Williams' one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Fun fact, folk, the Shed inspired that one.
He says, you know. So
now they run amok. They're usually ranked way higher than me. Took all my listeners. Way to go, John. Winning must be fun.
Well, he made it sound like you guys are friends.
We are friends. I know. I like competing. If anybody wants to start a podcast, I'll come on and I'll help get you off the ground because it changed my life. You know?
No, what you guys, I said it to them the other day. What you guys are doing is really important. For, you know, I know you, like a lot of people think podcasts are about entertainment and information, but I said to those guys last night, you know, it's about community, you know, and the hockey community is a strong community and it needs people talking, it needs people laughing, it needs people crying, it needs people being human. And that's what you guys let people do. So again, very much appreciated.
Missed my friends is how I started it. I missed the game and I can't believe all the fun things that have happened from talking to people I like in my shed, you know, like so some of the things that have just happened have been wild. And you've been to the Sheffield Arena. The Sheffield Steelers just won the Challenge Cup final, right?
Yeah. You know, they're both my old teams. I played for them both. So I didn't really have an allegiance. Obviously Sheffield are running away with the league and everything. And Guildford being that, you know, the underdog being as they got
you
a smaller
You were cheering
arena.
For Guildford, weren't you? Oh my word.
I did have a little soft spot for the Flames, but, Sheffield are pretty dominant right now.
Well, I haven't had any of the flames on. Don't plan on, don't know any of them. I know my shed guys, and I had had on, well, four or five of the Steelers that won that night, and Dean Woolley, the photographer. I had him on right before. And my
Yeah.
word, they win a championship. Winning is fun. Winning trophies is fun. And Sarah, my shed gal in the crowd, made a shed boost flag with the Steelers logo and my logo on it, threw it on the ice, and they took a photo on the ice with all the fans behind them with a shed boost flag. And man, that's heartwarming stuff. Whether I shed boost people or not, when they go out there and run amok after they talk to me and win trophies, that is cool.
It is cool. You're Stewart winning trophies. There's a new one behind you.
Oh yeah, there is a banner right there.
Yeah.
Way to go,
Yeah.
fellas. The under 13 tier one champions of WOAA, and our trophy. I brought it home to the
Beautiful.
shed. I had to do at least one podcast with my new hardware, right?
Yeah, well, I'm honored that it's with me. And because I know I see your posts about the kids and dude, it just warms my heart when I see kids having fun. And as you know, like I'm a stepdad and my 7-year-old, he's playing. Yesterday, he was on the ice with Peter Chickmonick, the St. Louis
The
Blues.
goalie,
No, he
Peter
played, he's a forward
Chickmonic.
for Chickmonick. Yeah. Chionic. Chickmonick was the
There
goalie.
you
You're
go.
right.
See, I am right. I didn't
Yeah,
think
you
I
are
was
right. Ch
wrong.
sorry, it's my bad. Chionic, Peter Chionic, who played for St. Louis. Chickmonick, unfortunately, just passed away a couple months ago. But Peter Chionic is very much alive, and he's coaching out here. He's got a bunch of young kids on the ice, and my little boy, he goes out there with them every Thursday, and I get to go out and help. And that
Get
is the best part of my week.
back on
Best
the
part of the
ice,
week.
eh? Isn't it weird going
Yeah,
back
yeah.
into arenas and you get the smell of the arena that can bring back some memories?
Oh, and just the smells, the ice, the crack, the noise. Shooting pucks, I don't shoot a puck as hard as I used to, but the pucks on the glass and the ding, it just sounds awesome. I love
I still shoot the puck just as hard, but then my elbow starts to
it.
hurt. But fun fact is, sometimes there's some things in minor hockey I don't agree with. My daughter's playing under 9 rep hockey. That's novice. That's when I won all Ontarios, and it's a memory for life. And they don't let them try and do that anymore. They have a tournament. I believe they call them jamborees, where everybody goes and plays hockey and everybody wins, but they keep score of the games. So I
Yeah.
have made a trophy for the gals. I just got to get it finished here. I got the WOA logo and I got champions. And then they just got to earn the thing I made that said Kincardine Canucks 2024. And then my girls
Yeah.
can win a trophy too. Don't just let the boys win trophies. I want everybody to win, you know?
Yep. If they win, that's the thing.
They
Like you
have to win. They
got
have to earn it or they ain't getting a
yeah.
trophy. Are you kidding me?
Well, it sounds like today that, like you say, like they're kind of taking away this idea of competition
That there's
and
winners and
we,
losers in life.
yeah, like as far as I know, when you've got more goals than another team, you've won that game.
Usually.
I totally admire and I want to support everyone for being involved, but I think kids need to know that losing is not bad. Losing is learning,
Yeah.
and so that we need to lose to learn. It's just again how we frame it, I suppose, in life. But
Well, and you do lose games, and it's not like you're going to win every game. And when you do lose, you got to realize how to not let that happen again.
exactly.
Yeah. And that's why I'm so proud of my boys. I got to talk about it. I haven't got to talk to anybody all week. I've been too busy and too happy. Last weekend, it was the start of the best two of three. We had played Saturday, Sunday. Play at home. My little fella scores the first goal, middle of the second, and it's a tight match. And it's way more fun for minor hockey. If anybody's listened to me in my shed, I know we get to go to All Ontario tournament now with all the winners 5.5 hours away. But if you played series and have the community come out and support your guys, and the grandparents can come, their cousins can come, all the people around town that are hockey people that want to come watch a great game of hockey can come. The boys had way more fans this weekend than they have all season. And now we drive 5.5 hours away, and nobody is going to be there to watch us other than the families, which is weird to me because I think we should play series and then see who's the best instead of play a tournament. But those are the rules, and we will do our best to win the tournament. If I was a betting man, I'll say we're going to pull her off. But anywho, We go down 2-1, start of the third. And we're down 2-1 for quite a bit of the third. And then my captain, big-time players, make big-time plays. Goes pretty well end-to-end. Top titties. Ties the game up with 6.5 minutes left. And then I say to my savage, because he's a savage, I say, I need savage mode right now. That's what we call it when he really cranks her up. And he went down there, outworked everybody behind the net. And then Mr. McGawk, episode 115, Buenos for the boys, digs out the puck behind the net, passes out front to Savage, and he buries it with 3.5 minutes left. And the building's going crazy in our hometown. And we go up 3-2, win the game, win game one. And then we go to their barn the next day. And fun fact, the parents did listen, and the siblings threw chocolate on the ice after we won. And you should have seen the other team's face when they had just lost a barn burner and then chocolate started hitting the ice. It was like someone kicked their dog. It was awesome.
Aww.
Yeah, it was great. But then the next day we went there and had another great hockey game. We were up 2-0 going into the third. And I'll never forget, I get pretty wild in my pregame speeches, but this one was between the second and third. And we're about to go out for the third period to win a trophy. And I just looked at them all in the eye. I went around the room and we just looked at each other in our eyes before I said anything. And the passion in their face, and like, it was one of the most memorable moments I've ever had at hockey, was going around the room and seeing the desire and the passion in their eyes and the way they looked at me. And then I just, you know, I might have swore a little bit, but I said, let's go do this. And I tell you, minor hockey to me is so awesome, because when you can get these kids, they try harder than NHL players. They try harder than any players in any league anywhere. And I've never seen a team try so hard. I couldn't be prouder. They did whatever it took. The other team scored early on in the third to make it 2-1. And then holy moly, it was a dog fight the rest of the way. It was nuts the last 5-6 minutes. Boys blocking shots, mucking it up. It was crazy. It was such a championship game. And we played a great team and they played great. And the boys did whatever it took. And we won 2-1. And to see kids learn what it takes to win, to see them go out and do it and know they did it for each other. And nobody cared who scored the goals. Nobody cared who got the assists. All they cared about was winning and about doing it for each other. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love this shit.
Yeah. It's, you know what? It's about doing it for each other. And it winning is. Becomes a byproduct of that. You know, yes. when you can get a team able to look one another in the eyes, that's when you have connection, right? And that's when a team will do anything for each other. And to them, like the winning becomes a byproduct because you're more connected than your opponent. So well done to you, buddy. Congratulations. Well, under 13 to NHL in no time, buddy.
Well, I can't wait to see where these puppies go, man. I got some players. I think there's some players that can go places, and I hope I've helped them enough that the ones I don't get a chance to coach again can take some things with them that will help them play on any team in any league, because it's neat to see your puppies fly.
Beautiful.
Yeah. But that's where my head's at now. I'm really happy. And let's get into a bit about what your message is all about, because that's really what hit home for me. Our last talk was obviously, not to bring up my own shit again, but I love hockey more than I've ever loved it now. I'm having more fun in my shed and coaching under 13 and watching my daughter play. That I love watching hockey. I love everything about hockey right now, but it wasn't always that way, you know?
No. I mean, our relationship with the game is going to change, right? And my relationship at 53 is that I know a lot more about what was going on when I was 28 than I did when I was 28. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the things that manifested in my life as a result of, you know, and I was talking about it again the other day, it's like the saddest thing ever, Wally, is that I can't remember my last game. You know, I was playing for the Guildford Flames and I was running a production company in London and I was on Sky Sports as a TV presenter and I was juggling these three things and I still wanted to play. It was in me. I was 28. I still could be really good. You know, I could deliver for a team. I could contribute and be part of a team. But then you know, one thing got in front of another, and the partying kind of took over, and the glam life of living in London, and the hockey just faded away slowly. And I never had a chance to say goodbye. I never had a chance to say goodbye to my teammates. I never had a chance to say goodbye to fans. Just faded away. And I was like 40 years old when I realized, man, I started drinking when I stopped playing hockey. I wasn't a big drinker as an athlete, because, as you know, my dad was an alcoholic and I didn't want to be like him. But it was when I lost that accountability that I had in the changing room, went on to this glamorous life that I thought was, you know, everything, but I felt like a fraud and an imposter as I was on TV and as I was hanging out in all these cool places with all these cool celebrities. And that's when the drinking just got a hold of me, because it took all my pain away. But like I say, the tragedy is that I never had a chance to say goodbye to hockey that way, and it faded out of my life. And it wasn't until I was in some really, really dark places, you know, when I reached out for help and found the accountability in my life that I needed to actually start taking part in my life again. Because, you know, from the age of 30 to 45, I was not an active member in, you know, my life. Hence all of the sadness and destruction that I left in my wake.
I have a research team. They didn't have time to get too hot because I didn't know where you were today. So my timing was off, but I don't know what we talked about last time. I know your story. And just to bring up my stuff, is getting out of the game is hard when you've been a hockey guy your whole life, and that's been your passion. That's been what gets you out of bed every day, is to go to practice, to go to the games. And it was all about being around the guys. It was all about being on a team. It was all a game. It was all fun. I mean, coaches could make it not fun, but the boys always made it fun. And you did everything together, on the ice, off the ice. You always had a crew of people you could go have fun with. And then I moved back home to a town I've never lived in, and I don't have a team. I don't have anybody except my family. And it was amazing that having kids is what really held me accountable. It's like, I have to figure this out. I have to keep getting up and figuring out what the hell I'm doing here for you guys. And it was awful for a while. And you know, you keep getting up and doing it, and then eventually it feels like home. You have a good job, you're working for great people, you work with great people, and you have a hockey team again full of shed guys.
Yeah, you know, I think people won't understand what it's like to be in a changing room with guys, you know, like just gobbing with each other, like doing the most, like you wouldn't talk about it on a podcast, but some of the most disgusting things guys would be doing, and just getting laughed, you know. Like, I remember there was this one guy on our team, and we just finished winning this really big game, and our changing room was not really nice. Like, we had that black hockey mat, and it got wet. It wasn't nice. It got slippy, and there was like people spit everywhere. And I just remember after the game, this guy just took all his equipment off. And he just started rolling around in the middle of the changing room and all of this grossness, you know, and it was like, but we just couldn't stop but laughing. You know, and yeah, just laughing at this guy just being an absolute moron, but he was our moron. You know, we loved this guy so much, but he was just like flipping out like a floppy dead fish on this gross, disgusting mat full of water bottle spit and stick tape and hot and sock tape all over the place, all sticking on his body, man. It was the funniest time. And it's just one of thousands of times that things like that happen. But unless you're a hockey player, you're not going to laugh at that.
There's so many things that non-hockey people don't think is funny that we do. I mean, very much like my pregame speeches in Cardiff. It's like, you try and explain that to people that aren't in the game, that I would get spray painted naked and dress as superheroes and run around doing pregame speeches for the boys. People may not get that, and they may not think that's very grown up in your 30s, but I thought it was hockey, and I still do. What you brought that story up, the one that I thought of was, we win the Challenge Cup that first year in Cardiff, but then we got put out in the playoffs by Belfast. And we have our year-end party in the locker room at the big blue tent. And we had a beer pong tournament, and we were having lots of fun. And it was the first year I'd party my son got to be involved in. He was 2 or 3. He got to play some beer pong with the fellas for a bit before things escalated. But then I do remember a fella putting on the Cardiff Devil Taz head in the room. And I believe he poured the ice bucket like all over him, and he was dancing and having fun, and the boys were having a laugh. And that's what it's all about, is getting the boys to laugh, right?
Yeah. It's such a, you know, and the getting on the ice for the game, that again is just part of it. 90% of it is in the locker room, it's on the buses, it's in people's houses, it's all the bonds and the connections. And as we keep using that word accountability, these friendships that you have with guys who's going to call you on your bullshit. They're going to say, hey, Nick, you know, what you said was out of line, or what you drank was out of line, or how you did this was out of line. And they kept me in line. And then when I stopped playing, Wally, you know, I was hanging out with guys who I chose as my new community that were probably a mistake. You know, there were guys that I looked up to, but they were involved and they were very selfish human beings that were
selfish,
very much about
shallow, and yeah,
money, 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 you know, and
in it for themselves, baby.
Yeah. And I needed help. I was 28 years old. I wasn't designed to take cocaine and to drink the way that I did and the way that they did. And it really affected me. And I think if I would have stayed around a little bit longer, maybe somebody would have said, hey, Nick, you know what? What's up? You don't look too good. But I didn't have a wife and kids to keep me accountable. I had freedom and I had a little bit of money saved up, and I had the ability to move countries and to move to LA and moved back to Canada, and everywhere I went, my relationships just became more and more surface-like, you know, and I became further and further away from the changing rooms. And, you know, and it almost killed me because I didn't have that language, didn't have the emotional dexterity to say, help me to somebody. Whereas, like, I know that if I was in the changing rooms and if I was that broken, I would have looked up to a guy like Fred Perlini or Ryan Campbell or Paul Thompson. These are guys in Guildford at the time, or Coach Stan Marple. And I would have been able to say, guys, I'm struggling. But all of a sudden, that's gone. You feel shame because of the way you are. You feel like, oh, I wish I could reach out to one of them. But you feel shame because you're like, oh, Nick, you're meant to be on TV. And you drive a Porsche now. And you look all, and you're dating this girl. And you're all good. But really inside, I was just really broken and fractured. And I just missed having just one teammate, you know, because I couldn't talk to my family. I couldn't talk to my friends. But if I just would have had one buddy just to say, hey, I'm struggling, then life may have been different.
On every team, man, it's true. The guys hold you accountable. Like, I even at under 13, I mean, I have captains and assistant captains that, like, we have a team of all guys that want it. And it's funny listening to them. They hold each other accountable. And it's like, so what I do is when I drop my son off at the front door, like I'm a dad, and I go sit in my truck for 15, 20 minutes and let the boys be the boys in the room. And then I come in as coach guy. And then I go in before the second game to win. And the other coach says they're having a team meeting. And I'm like, what's that now? Without us? And then He's like, yeah, the boys have called their own team meeting. And they apparently, these under 13 boys went around the room and told everybody what they thought they needed to do to win. And I was like, wow, that's cool. but anyways, I forget where I was going with that, the accountability, but then it's on a team, you're close with everybody, but you'll always have those couple guys that you do the most with and that you can open up with and talk about the real shit in life and tell them what's really going on. And then, you know, and you need those people. And then when you're done, and like me moving to Kincardine, and I don't have those people at the start, and I'm like, I don't have people to talk to, and like, I don't have my boys, you know, and you need your boys.
Yeah. You need your boys. And you know what? That's where I am right now. And that's why, you know, this week, and with what I've done over the last couple of weeks, the podcasts have reached out and they're like, Nick, you need to get this out to people, because what we're doing now, Wally, is, like, you know, in the UK, we've had a lot of tragedies this last year, you know, a big accident, but also a lot of, you know, incidents that have happened that were avoidable. I'm not saying the accident wasn't avoidable as well, but, you know, there's been suicides and overdoses. And I heard this phrase the other day when Keno passed away in Coventry was just all another one. Another one, Nick. Have you heard another one? And it just, something inside of me just snapped. And I was like, I cannot hear that phrase again, another one. And I'm not saying that there isn't going to be another one, but it's time now that, you know, retry my business, my resources, start to build something to support old, young hockey players. By that, I mean retired or non-competitive hockey players anymore, as well as a mixture of the competitive guys, because they are one day going to have to hang up the skates, and I want to try to help prepare them for that. But it's more for the guys that I, you know, that I played with. I've had over the years, guys have reached out to me and asked for help or some guidance along my journey. And because everyone knows that I'm a recovered alcoholic and I've had struggles with alcohol use, so that they phone for some advice around stuff. And it's, and over the last 4, 5, 6 years, I've been able to help some guys. But this idea that I looked back and, you know, my involvement in UK on and off for over 30 years. And there's only been a union once, and it was for like 3 or 4 years. Tim Cranston ran it, and with a lawyer named Joanne Collins, Joe Collins, I think that's her name. And it just, it was there to support players. It was the Ice Hockey UK PA, and it just faded away. So there's never been a support network available for UK hockey players. And I was like, we need to start one now. And I've started, it's the working title is the UK Ice Hockey Stick Together Tribe. And it's, I've told everybody AI made that title and AI made the logo, because what I want to try to do is I want to get as many guys on board as possible so that we can name it. And we can make a logo and really make it the players. So it's a support network designed by the players for the players. So what I want to do is get as many guys on board. We have the platform already. It's a non-proprietary mobile application that you download on your phone, and it's got the title of the UK Ice Hockey Stick Together Tribe, and you request to join it. And if you have played or are playing hockey in the UK, then I'm gonna admit you. And every week to 2 weeks, we're having these sessions where we're asking players what their challenges are or have been, the resources that they've had or don't have, the things that they would like to see in the platform, and how can we create a platform that is mainly peer-to-peer support, because that's what really worked for me in 12-step recovery was. I needed to be somewhere where there's no doctors, no psychologists, no therapists, just another man who understands what I've been through. And that built that trust, and that got me to where I am today. So I want to give that to other guys where they can be in a network of guys who have been there, like maybe even old teammates who said, yeah, I've been there too. Let's start talking together and offering support. Then my business partner is Dr. Misha Jervis. She's a sports psychologist of 30 plus years. She was a sports psych before there were sports psychs. And she's worked at top level elite football for years. She was one of the England Lionesses' first sports psychologists. So we're gonna offer sessions for guys to go to give them some tools around, even the last one, like learning self-compassion. Because she sat in one of the first couple of meetings, and she noted that she's like, you hockey players, you're really super, super kind and giving towards people, but you're not really that kind to yourself. You're not very compassionate to yourselves. You're hard on yourselves. And this is coming from us, you know, an elite level sports psychologist talking to a bunch of hockey players who haven't played in years going, you guys are too hard on yourselves. So just from that, we're learning, Wally, that we can hold these sessions to help. That's the idea of this platform, is it's going to be a safe space for players only. They're not going to have to worry about fans or wives or parents or anybody getting in there. It's going to be a safe place where we can gain trust and be vulnerable with each other. And I think that it's something that has been needed for a long time, but it is just time to do it. And that's why I'm talking on all these podcasts, so that I can get guys to come in and sign up and just be curious to go, yeah. Do you know what? Because people are like, oh, to be in a support network, I've got to be like Nick was, you know, like dying of alcoholism. That's not true. You know, you can have all
it's not true at all.
You can have everything in a row. Everything's good. But you still need some support, accountability, friendship, camaraderie that we had when we had in the changing rooms.
It doesn't. If you're a true hockey guy, like if deep down you're a hockey guy, it doesn't matter what real world job you get after, no matter how much money they pay you, no matter how you are gonna miss the game. And I'm not talking about playing hockey, I'm talking about the game, I'm talking about all of it. I'm talking about waking up and your job is going to the rink and talking to Luke Pigott about the most ridiculous, funny things, and then talking to Hendo, and then talking to all these guys, and then you go out, muck it up together, get exercise, compete with each other, see who can win, joke around about who won after practice, and then go for lunch, and that's your day at work? It doesn't even make sense.
Yeah. You know what I miss? I miss guys, you know, and taking the mick out of each other, taking the piss, right?
Taking
the piss. Like, where
else
can
you go? Do you
know
what that means yet?
What's that?
Do you know what taking the piss means yet, growing up in Canada?
I played in the UK. I spent most of my time in the UK.
I know.
But, like,
what does it mean?
This is, like, making fun of one another.
That's what I thought, too. Taking the piss.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you say taking the mick or taking the piss, right? And it's just... Yeah, taking the Mickey, and that's just winding someone up, just literally, just like what kind of shoes are those? Like,
but then
somebody
on,
the
but
dress.
Then on the piss is getting in one, right?
Getting drunk, yeah, getting pissed
on the piss.
but I miss guys ribbing each other, like giving each other a bit of a hard time. And I was listening to Joe Rogan the other day, and he was talking about how comedians have it so good because they can literally just rip the shit out of each other after someone's done a set and go, dude, you fucking stunk. And they just laugh about it. No one takes it personally. And we just live in this really delicate world where we can't laugh at each other. We can't laugh at ourselves. And I really miss that. And it's just so like delicate that we can't.
And I think
can't
it
get
takes,
to that.
It's hockey guys that are okay with all that. And it's the way we bring each other up together and hold each other accountable. It's like, I was at work the other day and I go into the bathroom and I see I have a nose hair. A gray nose hair sticking way out of my nose. And that guy,
is it wiry or is
it was
it pokey?
It was way out there. And I said to the guy that's been sitting in the office with me all day, I'm like, hey man, if I got a long gray nose hair sticking out of my nose, I need you to let me know. Don't tiptoe around with me. You tell me. I don't need to find out in the bathroom. You just let me know and I'll yank that puppy.
Yeah. I have someone come and put a marshmallow on it and say, like, let's roast this bad boy.
It's interesting since starting this and like becoming myself again and finding myself again. It's like now when I go to work, I'm like, meh, I'm just going to sling it. I'm going to be me all the time and I don't care. And people like it and I'm allowed to be me all the time. And it's a life changer.
Yeah. Do you think you had to find yourself again, or do you think it's just you had to go through this evolution to be a new you? You know, because I'm interested to know, like,
I think I'm a lot the same as who I was, except as a pro hockey player, I had to try and fit in a lot and I had to not be too much because of the coaches and GMs. And as soon as the coaches and GMs were out of the room, then I could be Wally. Because I was always worried about if they really knew what I was really like. But then I find out my teammates really liked it and maybe I should have been like that all the time, you know?
Yeah. Isn't it funny, like, how far away we go from being our true character, like fun loving or reserved or comedic or serious or deadpan. Like, we can be ourselves, but in other environments, we put on this facade. Mm-hmm. And that's what I found at 28 years old. I started living a facade of a guy who wore Savile Row suits and drove a Porsche. That wasn't me. I was a kid from Saskatchewan, you know? And then all of a sudden I'm in the limelight of the West End and I had to put on an image. And that really exacerbated when I stopped playing hockey because there was nobody around to go, Nick, you're not like that. Come on, man. Like you know, like you like a nice, like some nice clothes, but you're not James Bond. Like, stop trying to be someone you're not. Yeah. And they could see people. I could see myself trying to be James Bond or trying to be some Wolf of Wall Street guy, hucking money around the table and like buying food and drinks for people, trying to put on this image, going into debt so that I could pay for someone's food who I've never met. So they would, I would think that they would like me. Like this, this is how far away I got from me. And I think when I think back, I think there was a character of me, and I have gone back to fun loving, a guy who likes to have a joke, you know, to not take life too seriously, like to try to make people laugh and have fun and just enjoy life. And I think I have found that guy again. He's a big kid, you know? And I think that I've found my childhoodness without all the fear that went with it.
Yep.
Where I could just be me. And, but while it's taken a journey, you know, it's taken a journey and it's taken a lot of people around me to help me. And all I want is to be able to have guys in a safe space, this UK hockey support network, so that we can be our authentic selves, even if it's just for an hour a week,
right?
Online with some guys. Just like this is how we'll do it. But then hopefully that can permeate their real life, you know, and they can start to find their childhood, find the hockey player in them, find a laugh and a joke. And I'm not saying that we don't have to take life seriously, but at least start seeing some humor and taking things a little bit lighter and being a little bit easier on ourselves and not too hard on ourselves, and take that into the real world and into our family life, et cetera. So, you know, this is the aim of what we're trying to do.
I completely agree with all of it. It's similar to what I'm doing. I mean, I'm doing this for myself because it makes me happy. But it takes everybody. You see all the posters behind me of all the guys that's come on. And even yourself today, and trying to book a time. It's like, I don't have a lot of time in the day, but I got to find a way to be myself for an hour and a half a week, at least once a week, because if I don't make time for this, I don't have the same energy. I'm not as excited to be up and at them. And it's like, if I get to be myself for an hour and a half, watch how much energy I have after and watch the shit I can do for you, you know?
And we're taught as men not to do that. You know, I was talking to a buddy of mine this morning, and this morning, like in the mornings, I like to do a cold plunge and a sauna. And I'm lucky I can do it because in Czech Republic, it's quite popular to do. So there's a lot of places that you can go to, a lot of membership clubs where they'll do a cold plunge for 3 minutes, have a little relax, then go do sauna for 15, 20 minutes. And there was a guy who was there with me, who I work with, and he's like, he was anxious. And I was like, what's wrong? He's like, I feel like I need to be at work. I was like, dude, you are at work. You've got to look after yourself. You know, since I've known him, he's been sick 3 or 4 times. I've not been sick. I've been sick once. And I think it's because I look after my immune system by doing this heat shock protein making stuff in the mornings with this protocols that I do. And I was like, just because, you know, you're taking an hour of your day to do something like this, it doesn't mean it isn't work. But we're taught as men that we need to be at the grinder, like literally 9 to 5, provide for the families, show up, do all the money. I can't have a nap because they're going to think I'm weak. All that BS. And we need to create environments where it's okay to go for a 10, 20 minute nap. It's okay to go for a little swim or go to the gym or to do something that we call self-care, right? Which means, like people say, you know, that you can only share what you've got. And if your cup is half empty, you know, because you're tired and you're lethargic, you're burnt out, you can't share any of it. But if you're topped up and you're ready to go because you've been eating right, sleeping right, you know, like just looking after yourself, doing some meditation, doing some yoga, whatever it is to keep you in a physical state, a mental state, then you're able to help people and you're able to show up for work and for your family. So, you know, this idea that we can't spend an hour or two a week, you know, either in friendship and chats with guys to laugh, to joke, to share stories, or to do some sauna and cold plunge in the morning, it's laughable. We have to start doing this, and we have to start helping other men be accountable to do it. And I have a checklist that I do every morning, and I send it to guys saying, I've done my meditation, I've done my stretching, I've drank my water, I've tried to face the sun for 10 or 15 minutes. Cause I listen to Andrew Huberman and I do a lot of his protocols, you know, like the neuroscientist out of Stanford that, you know, he gives you all these free tips on how to maximize your health I want to try and do it, but I make sure that I've got a group of other men who are doing it with me. So I'm not, so I'm sharing it so that we're making sure we're getting out of bed on time and we're showing up for our lives and for ourselves.
I just wake up and like make sure I do my job, but then I also find a window I can hit the shed and be myself for a little bit. It makes me happier, makes me healthier. I don't have checklists or anything. I just kind of wake up and feel the rhythm, you know.
Oh, dude, you know what? Like, they can be mental checklists, but it is just as long as like there's some kind of, for me, I need some kind of routine in the morning. Well, and it's different now that.
For me, it's that, I mean, so when you've been a hockey guy and you played in a bunch of different countries, had kids in different countries, and that was your life, and then it's over. And then, like, for me, you talked about how extreme you went to be a different person. For me, it was like, I bought way too fancy of a suit for a guy like me. It didn't feel right on me. I thought, I have an MBA and I'm going for job interviews. I got to look like a fancy boy. And it's like, I ain't a fancy boy. I should be myself now when I look back on it. But when you come back and then you're living in a neighborhood where at 7 a.m., everybody pulls out of the driveway and goes down the road and then goes off, and then they come back at 5 something o'clock and then have their night with their kids, and then you wake up and do it again. You pull out of the driveway in the morning, you go to work, you come back, and you just do the same thing over and over again. It's like, man, this is boring. It's like, I need something way more exciting than just doing work every day. And then when you think of this and you're like, so I could wake up and not know who I'm going to talk to, what kind of messages I'm going to get sent from all over the world about fun stuff that's happening in hockey. And it's like, all of a sudden my life's exciting again, but I can still do the boring shit.
The boring shit sometimes pays the bills, doesn't it?
It sure does.
This is the other thing too, is like, you know, like when I wonder why so many people, why I have so many guys reaching out to me saying, Nick, I'm struggling. And, you know, we live in a world now, Wally, where, you know, it is that Groundhog Day for so many people, where we get up, get in the car,
mundane,
drive to work.
Yeah.
Just do, you know, do, and we're not fulfilling any purpose. And I, the name of my company, Retribe, it was an accident at the beginning, but it is a now like 7 years into it, Retribe really does mean finding your tribe again, finding the tribe that you have accountability and purpose with. Because for tens of thousands of years of human evolution, humankind, the species of man that you are in today, your DNA, your lineage was part of a tribe. And in that tribe, you had a purpose. You had an innate skill that you served to that tribe in order for the tribe to survive life or death. You are a healer or a shaman or a guard or a hunter or a gatherer or a craftsman. You had a job that kept that tribe living. And we've lost that today. Now, your purpose is to fill into a system where you have to go in and punch and do this. And you're really serving a system rather than your tribe. Because there's, you know, I won't get into all the geopolitical stuff that's going on in the planet right now, but and the economics, but so many guys are just sitting there going, oh, I just don't feel like I have any purpose. And I think that when we're playing, especially a sport like hockey, there's something in us that's tribal, that's competitive, that's warlike, you know, where you literally do go to war and you've got this weapon in your hand and you play this game to win. And it's very highly competitive, and it fulfills all of these innate needs for us as humans that we probably had on battlefields tens of thousands of years ago. So sport is so important for us because it gives us a purpose. Then all of a sudden it's gone. And then all of a sudden you're on TV and you're a presenter for Sky Sports and you're getting all this money and you're doing all this stuff. And you're like, but what's my purpose? I miss my hockey guys. You know, and then someone introduces you to a line of cocaine and a martini and you go, oh, okay, now I'm just numb. Now I just feel connected to myself, but I still have no purpose. And then I went down that dark, dark road that led to me almost dying. But why can't we have some purpose back in our lives? You know, and we had it when we played sports. Let's try to at least keep it going and helping us manage, you know, the grant, whether it's a grind or not for work, but we have to pay the bills, but we can still be connected with guys that gives us some sense of purpose and team and belonging.
Well, yeah. And that's what makes me feel very fortunate. It's like, I can pretend that I don't have a sponsor of the shed that pays me money to do this. And it's like, well, actually, I work for a shed guy and he pays my wages for the year and lets me do this. And I do put Super Heat on every poster. I have made them a sponsor, whether they like it or not, because they've let me be me. They were the ones that took me in when I had nothing and I was down and out. And I will do whatever for them. I'm a loyal person. I always was in hockey. Even if teams didn't want me back, it would piss me off forever because I was loyal to them and thought I did everything I could for them. And I will do the same for him. And now I've been with him for 8 years, and it's longer than any hockey team I've been on. And yesterday we have a practice at 3:30 on a Thursday, and I got to leave work to get the kids at like just after 2 o'clock. And I don't have to tell nobody but my team where I'm going and say, I have to go do this, take care of things while I'm gone. And they do. And when you win a championship and before the playoffs started, we have our business emails. And then at the end, he says, playoffs, win at all costs. And then you wake up Monday after winning a championship and you can send it to your CEO of the team picture. And he writes back, way to go, one more step. And you're like, I have a tribe, and it's in my real world is I'm allowed to be hockey guy in the real world, and it means the world to me. And then I got to bring this up too, because it was a message that meant a ton to me. The main reason is because it came from a friend in the real world. He came to watch our final game when we won the trophy. And then I didn't know he was there. I knew he probably was going to come, but he used to work with me. And like, we were boys at work, and he was a manager and I was doing my thing with my department. And, you know, we became close that way. And then I haven't seen him for a while, and he comes and watches the game. And he says, was your kid number 15? And I'm like, yeah. He's like, I knew that was your kid right away. And I'm like, what does that mean? And he says, well, because he would do whatever it takes and would run through a wall for his teammates or his coach. And I'm like, you didn't even play hockey with me. You're a real world friend. What are you talking about? You know? Fun stuff.
Incredible. Yeah. And I'm wondering, you know, Wally, is that like people are going to be listening to this and they're going to hear you saying that, you know, you've done all this work to get to where you are, where you've got this life, where you've got this podcast, you've got Ched, you've got your kids playing. And there's going to be guys out there, Wally, that go, I wish I could do or have what he's got. And I'm just stuck in the mundane, and I'm just, you know. But it hasn't always been like this for you, right? And there has been these moments where you're, and I want to give guys some hope that there is a way for them to be able to enjoy life the way you're enjoying life, and to be involved with minor hockey or even like floor hockey, roller hockey, like to be involved in a community, even joining this support network where we can just helping, like even like on LinkedIn, there's a hockey players business group there, and people support each other. People talk to each other. Like, hockey is such a great game that, you know, if you've played or been involved in the game and you're feeling isolated, you're feeling lonely, you're feeling like you've lost your friends, there are ways out of it. And this is one of the first steps that we want people to do, is by being able to join this support network as well. Oh, I'm back. You know,
finally,
I'm back with the boys.
Yeah, back on the team, back with the boys. I whether it's your platform, whether it's hockey, ball hockey, roller hockey, I think everybody you need, like you'd call it a tribe, you need something you're into. You need something that gets you up and say, I can't wait to go see them or go do this. You need something that gets your juices going. And man, this minor hockey thing is like that third period of a championship game. And it's like, I don't get to go out there and hit anybody, block a shot, shoot a puck. I'm just watching the puppies play. And like, my juices were flowing so much that it was like, I am more back in the game than I've ever been. And it wasn't always like this, man. I had a tough go when I was done. I had a tough go while I was still in Cardiff with my knee injury. I heard it in October, November, and I didn't play again the rest of that year. And I always had the hardest times when I was injured and I was around the boys, but I wasn't like really playing or on the team. And you miss the road trips. You're not around for the practices because you got to go to physio or rehab or whatever. And you're not a part of it. And I had a tough go. And it wasn't until they let me be the pregame speaker that I was like, I have a purpose again. I'm going to make these the most legendary pregame speeches I can possibly think of, because this is my shot to help the team win, you know?
Yeah, that's beautiful.
But then I don't even have those guys. I'm not even getting spray painted naked for the boys anymore. I don't even have those people now. And it's like, I don't even have a job. And then it takes a shed guy, Dean Netsky, who's my parents' friends, that reaches out and says, I could use a helper outer guy. And I'm like, I'll help you. And then he gets you out of the house. He gets you going and being a carpenter and a painter, and you're around town meeting different people. And I was out for lunch with him the day I met my CEO, the shed guy that's taken care of me the last 8 years and trusts me and believes in me. And it took a guy to come and pick me up and dust me off and get me back out there.
And they're out there, you know, guys are out there, and that's their purpose. That's my purpose. My purpose is to look for guys. And I was saying this again, it's like, you know, when I was in those really, like, I knew that I needed help when I was 30. Like, I was 30 years old and I was just about to take off towards LA. And I was like, I knew I was running. And I knew wherever I ran, my problems would follow. I knew it deep down inside, but I didn't have the language. I didn't have the ability to say, can you help me? Because I had to put on this like image and this persona. So it just didn't, I just couldn't do it. And for 15 years, whenever something bad would happen or there was something with my health, acute pancreatitis, I've had a couple of times, and or drink driving conviction, or, you know, the loss of a relationship or business partners wanting nothing to do with me, all along those lines, there's signs where, you know, a person who's got emotional dexterity can say, help me. But I was taught that my dad really did believe it. Nick, if you show weakness, people will prey on you. So never ask for help. Never show any emotions. Definitely don't let them see you cry, and never, ever use the word help me. And which I already said,
well, that's a different generation too, right? Like the older folks, they do believe, like, and they are tougher than us. I mean, some of them, they hide a lot of stuff inside.
They believed in it, but I'm not saying that it ever worked. I'm saying that what it did is it stifled just my emotional intelligence. So that the only time that I did ask for help was when I was literally, I could feel death. You know, I could taste it. I could feel that if I have a drink, I am going to die, because I was in hospital 6 times the month of April before I got sober in May. And the doctor's like, Nick, you know, every time you come in, you're like, all of your enzyme levels in your liver's shutting down. Your kidneys are not working. Your pancreas is just crying out in pain, and your acute pancreatitis, any drink make your pancreas fail and you're dead. And I was mixing benzos and vodka. And they're like, they're benzodiazepine. They're like Valium. Okay. And the combination is just a liver killer. My eyes were yellow because my liver wasn't working. It was distended and point pink, like it was out here. And that's what it took for a guy like me to say, help me to somebody, you know, and I was absolutely crushed, but I said, help me to somebody. And So I didn't for years have the language. And then now we know when they say so-and-so took their life, I wish they would have asked for help. It wasn't like I was suicidal, but I didn't care if I lived or died. Like I knew if I was going to bed with a bottle of vodka next to my bed, I knew every sip that I took, because I sipped 24 hours a day, could be my last. And I just didn't give a shit. I didn't care if I lived or died. My house looked like something out of Trainspotting. I was a mess. Wasn't paying rent. It was squatting. It was like, you know, I wasn't eating any food. I was like just a mess. I didn't care if I lived or died. So I certainly wasn't going to ask anyone for help. But it took for me to get to where I got to. And I don't want people to get to where I got to. I want to teach people that asking for help is a sign of strength and a sign of courage. It's not a sign of weakness. Being emotional, crying, they're all things that we are designed to do. And if we bottle them in, guaranteed they're going to come out in some way. And most likely it's a destructive, violent way. But we need to be able to show emotions. We were given them for a reason. And I want to create environments where people will actively look for other people. Because this is what I was saying. It's like, you know, it's great to talk. It's good to ask for help. But if you don't have the ability to, then you could end up in a very, very bad way. So what best to have is a peer-to-peer support network where guys keep an eye on each other, where guys can check in with each other and learn the language to be able to check in and to ask, how are you doing, without being intrusive, and being able to hear signs of like, actually, that guy isn't doing too well. Let's go for a coffee. Let's bring him out with the boys. You know, let's maybe talk to Misha, a sports psychologist, who might be able to give some advice and some guidance. Because again, I'm not saying that I can prevent another one, but I've got to do my best to make sure that there isn't one.
Well, and it is sad when you see it in the hockey world, and it is happening not just in the UK, but everywhere. These former hockey players that they're in the limelight, and then they go back to the real world and they're raising families. And even the ones in the NHL that had millions of dollars, and you know, everybody thinks they have everything, that not the person, the public thinks these guys that make millions have everything you need in life, but then they've been doing that and then it's taken away from them and it's just over, and you lose your team. And I mean, some of those people that leave home when they're 14, 15 years old to go play somewhere and never really get back except for the summers. I felt it when I went to Germany. I felt it when I went to Western Michigan and then Germany, that although my hometown buddies that were all my best friends and we were brothers for life and we still are, was every summer you'd go back was everybody's relationships jockeyed a bit. Everything was a little bit different. And then you get kids and wives involved and stuff. And it would just, every summer you went home, it's like, man, it's just a little different. And like, it's not, my crew's all not still together. There's this crew over here and that crew over there. And then it just feels less like home. And like, there's guys that don't even get home in the summers. And then you're done in your 30s. And you're like, so what is home now? Where is home as a hockey player? It's like, I hadn't lived in Ontario since I was 17. And it's like, I move here and people are telling me where the games are. I'm like, I got to look up Google Maps to figure out where this stuff is. You know, it's weird.
Yeah, it is. And the idea of where home is, you know, it's a tough one, because I think that, you know, like, again, for so many of us, home was a rink, you know, home was a change room.
It was
home
with your the team, boys. Wherever you were.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I know, yeah, I know, you know, the NHL lost another guy the other night. And like I say, while I don't know, I don't know how to end it. I don't know if it'll ever end. Like I say, all I can do is
do
my best to support
that. You
can
only do what you can, right? And shout out to Rob Smith, who shed guy, who's part of Andy's men's club. And that's what's neat for me, is he writes to me and says, since coming on your podcast, it's crazy. I've been asked to be on other podcasts, and then I was just asked to be on BBC Sheffield or whatever. And he's running the men's club, where it's not just hockey players. It's any man that wants to come in and be part of a community and talk about whatever. And beautiful. He was telling me some of the numbers of how many guys are showing up, and then I guess after he talked to me in my shed the next week, there was quite a few more people. And it's like, hey, I'm just having fun in my shed, but if I'm helping anybody, that's really cool.
It is cool. And you'd be surprised at how many people listen, how many people take notes, because there's so many people that feel that just they don't know, they can't put a word on it, but it's just stuck, disconnected. You know, just something's off. That's what they'll say. And they'll hear you, they'll hear a guest, and they'll do some writing, some. And I always find this, Wally, is just to be curious. You know, I don't have all the answers, or I've got a few, but I don't have them all. And I'm just asking anyone who hears this, just be curious. Just be curious as to what we're saying about community, about connection, about accountability, about friendship and bonds and brotherhood. You know, the things that we had when we played, they're never going to be the way they were, but we can still support each other throughout it. And there you find that some guys do. Some guys have their normal meetups and they go for coffees or beers or barbecues. And they're the guys that tend to be, you know, pretty solid and okay because they've kept not connected. But so many guys just, they go off. They, like me, they just fade away. You know, nobody nope. even knew that I'd gone, you know?
Yeah. And it was like when I was back here for a while there, it's like, I mean, the Cardiff Devils carry on. And they have their new guys come in and they're still a team and they're still playing the next season. And then they start their new things and their new traditions and they're a new hockey team. And you don't always think about the guys that were on your team the year before. And it's like, what happened to him and what's he doing now? And there were only a few to a handful of guys that like I was in contact with. Hendo and Cardiff, we talked quite a bit of everything. And it's those are the people that's like, you know, when it's over, it's like, well, you find out who your real friends are, the people that see how you're doing and are like, hey, what's up?
Yeah. And it's so important to check in on people. And that's my message. Check in on your brothers. And there are ways to do it. And if you want to find some good ways, then join our support network and learn from, you know, trained people about things to listen for, things to watch out for, just so you can keep an eye on each other. Because I know everybody have different challenges. And on the outside, no one would have said that I was facing challenges when I was 31, 32 years old. They would have said, Nick, man, you're living in LA. You're living the dream. You're doing all this stuff. But inside, I needed help then more than when I was 45, you know, because it would have saved me 15 years of pain and suffering, you know. And that's my true objective too, is to help guys. Just, I want to save years.
Well, once you've been through it, it's a lot easier to know what it's about. And it's like, you know, things, I could have left hockey differently. I could have played till the end of the year and had a job ready for me at the end of the season and everything, you know, could have flowed a bit better than it did, but it went the way it did. And I mean, I got through it, and I think it helps make you who you are, but it also makes you realize the fun times in life. And it's like, every time I get to come out here and do this with shed guys and gals, and it's like, I can't wait. I can't wait to drop the puck. I can't wait to be myself again and not give a shit what anybody thinks about me and say whatever the hell comes to my head, you know?
It's a beautiful thing, man. Yeah.
It is. But so, okay, here's a thing I could use advice on then. Mm-hmm. Last time you came on, a guy wrote to me and said, thank you so much for that talk. I've been really struggling lately with alcohol abuse and being out of the game and this and that. And I was like, oh, I'm like, I don't know what to, I'm like, I'm here for you. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to write back because this isn't a guy in Canada that I can go for a coffee with. He's elsewhere. And I didn't really know what to say back other than, man, I'm here for you. I know what it's like to be out of the game. do you want to come to the shed? Because that's like my therapy is like, do you want to come to the shed and we'll just talk hockey? And he just wrote, it's all good, man. I'm managing on my own right now. And I'm like, okay, managing on your own. I'm like, okay. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll leave you alone. But then it's like, when do you poke back and be like, hey, man, how you doing? You know, it's like, I care and I want to know. But what was neat for me then was I did see him like a year later and he was back in the game and had a big ass smile on his face. And we gave each other a hug. And I was like, good to see you back in the game. You know,
you did what you could do, right? And we can offer help, and we can look out for guys, and we can, you know, we can text and we can check in on guys. But ultimately, and that is amazing stuff, because that can just wake somebody up to a certain point where maybe they're gonna phone
realize that it's happening, right? Yeah, maybe he didn't realize he wasn't abusing it until he listened to us. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah. But you can just be, you can just get somebody curious. But you cannot help anybody until they're ready to receive help. You know, so I'm proactive. I'm looking for people, and what I do is I share stories. So because I'm a recovered alcoholic and I've been to those really dark places, I'll talk about what it was like to drink before it got really, really bad. And I'll talk about why I drank and how I felt connected when I took a drink. And how drinking solved my problems. It wasn't just a social lubricant and something to make me relax. It actually made me feel connected, because I felt so disconnected when I didn't have a drink. And I felt so uncomfortable in my own skin that I needed a drink just to exist. And I'll talk about the reasons why. And then what happens then is that I get some trust with them, and then I can suggest to them some solutions. But it's up to them whether or not they take the solutions. And I always say this, well, you can never throw a cushion under somebody when they're on their way down. You got to let somebody get to where they need to get to so that they can finally say, help me, you know, and sometimes I'm guilty of it. I've thrown cushions under guys and I've taken them into my house and I've wrapped them up and I've held them and I've fed them and I've looked after them. And I did it because I really thought it was a good thing to do, but I did it because it made me feel good. You know, and it made me feel a bit like a hero. And I realized that it was really selfish of me. And that person ended up going out and drinking again. So you really got to be careful that you don't want anybody to hurt themselves, and God forbid for them not to make it. But we are not gods. We don't have that control over people. All we can do, be helpful, kind, compassionate, and do the things that you did do, which is you offered friendship. You offered connection, and lo and behold, this man may have just heard something that where he was like, I'm going to start taking part in my life again. I'm going to start taking some action and actually address my alcohol use. And look at him now, you know, so you did what you were meant to do.
I don't know how long I've been doing this now. I guess 3 years. That's crazy. But the messages you can get by, I guess, putting yourself out there. And it's like, for a lot of my life, I was more embarrassed about who I was and how big of a donkey I can be. And when you look back on it, it's like, well, it's actually just having fun and being a hockey guy and having fun with my buddies. And then you get these messages when you just start talking to hockey guys in your shed, and you're like, there's no way that's real. And like, it's some kid that's broken up with his girlfriend that says, I'm okay. I got hockey and I got the podcast. And I'm like me talking to my shed. What does that mean? Weird stuff.
Yeah. Like I say, community comes to people in different ways, and podcasts are a huge way to keep community and to build community. And I keep saying it to you guys, 3on3 and Zero Pucks and 4000 and yourself, just keep doing what you're doing, because people listen. And
People, look at this. Chocolate is still raining all over the world, folks, and it's going to rain in Kincardine this weekend for my gals. Shed boost.
Beautiful.
And that was from having a seven-year-old in my shed, Charlie Wilcock, who then sent me chocolate and his hockey card that I have right here. And it I'm part of a community again. And it's like, it's not even just in one arena. It's like, it's in Cardiff, Sheffield, Manchester. It's in Herning, Denmark. I mean, it's pretty neat to be part of a community. And it's pretty neat to be part of a community that you created with your friends, like what you're doing.
It's essential, you know, and I have these three things. I don't know what comes first. I'm still discovering it. Connection or community and connection. But either way, you know, maybe we need community to find connection, or maybe we need connection to find community. It's ambiguous, but we need them, you know. We need connection. Like, if people say, what is the problem that the world is going through right now? All of the problems can come down to what? And I say it's disconnection, a disconnection from self, disconnection from your family, disconnection from your tribe, disconnection from the earth, disconnection from the stars. We've become disconnected as a human race. And it's really fucking simple. If the problem is disconnect, the solution is connection. And that means listen to podcasts, reach out to guys, ask people for help, even if you're struggling with it. Find some connection around with people who understand what you've been through. I'm telling you, life will get easier. We're meant to enjoy life. We're not on this planet to suffer. We're on this planet to have fun.
I mean, well, it's like when you think about life and how of all the different ways people could have walked around this earth and done different things for us to be born and for our parents to have met and done the thing it needs to be done to make you. And it's like, of all the different days and times they could have done it that made a different person, it's like, we are all meant to be here and you should enjoy it. You get to do it one time.
We are meant to be here. We have a purpose. And a lot of people just, well, what's my purpose? What's my purpose? I can't start a podcast and I can't build a community. I can't, all the things you can't do rather than things you can do.
Yeah, just go out and do it. I used to always think of all the things I can't do. It's like, I can't call that and ask that. And it's like, I can't do this and that. It's like, I can ask whoever I want to come on here. I'll talk to whoever I want. And I'm not even going to be nervous talking to anybody, you know? And back in the day, it's like you'd see a big NHL star and you're like, my tongue doesn't work. I don't know how to talk. And you get all nervous. And then it's like, I'm supposed to go out and play with these guys. And I'm so nervous, I can't even talk. And then you go out there and you play like shit because you're nervous as hell. And it's like being confident in yourself and just being like, hey, I can go do this. I can.
You know,
watch me.
And sometimes those NHL stars, they don't have a lot to offer. And I remember, like, I was at this gig in Hamilton, and when I was 12 years old, I interviewed Wendell Clark when he was playing for the Blades, and it was something that I had to do for a class project, and I got to interview Wendell Clark. And I went down to the Saskatoon Arena, the old barn there, and I had this big ghetto blaster. I'm 12 years old to record it, right? And I go back and I interview Wendell Clark, and he's just before he gets drafted. And he basically says, all I want to do is be a pro. All I want to do is make the pros. And that was the name of this little report that I wrote. And it got me an A, and I did really well. And I went on to play hockey, and I went on to get a career in broadcasting. And I was in Hamilton, Ontario, about 8 years ago, 9 years ago, is before I got sober, and he was in an event there. And I walked up to Wendell Clark, and I was like, Mr. Clark, I have to tell you this story. I met you when I was 12 years old. And I interviewed you, and it was before you got drafted, and it was all. And I told him what happened, and dude, he just blanked me. I thought he'd be like, dude, that's a really cool story, and you became a broadcaster and everything like that. But man, he was like, he just blanked me completely. Maybe he didn't believe it or whatever, or it was too unbelievable.
Maybe
but
you just caught him at the wrong time, because I have a different Wendell Clark story. We had a game here in town where it was. The big nuclear power plant had their team against another company that works there, and they each brought a hockey team, and I was pretty new in town, and they asked me to play for the Bruce Power team. So I did. I went out and played, and went the other team brought Wendell Clark as like a celebrity. He skated with people before. I don't know how much money they paid him to be here, but
yeah,
then they put him on the other team than me. And I was like, Oh, yeah? Well, you're like 50-something now. Let's see what's up. And then we got right into mucking it up. And I think my team won by one, but hey, who's counting, Wendell? And then we went to Boston Pizza in town, and we had beers, and we chatted, and he was normal, down-to-earth farm boy from Saskatchewan. Then he took off, and I had to flood my house, and it was a fun night. But
fun night, yep.
Yeah, but
maybe
he
I
was a
did catch
great
him on the
guy.
night off.
But
Maybe
it's
he
like
didn't like
you
my story.
well, imagine what it's like to be an NHL superstar for years. It's like I
Oh
saw my
yeah.
buddy from home deal with it, where you'd go golfing, and it'd be four guys that are all pro hockey players. One of us is in the NHL. The other two guys I'm riding around with make lots of money too, but they play in Europe. And it's like everybody talked to him like they were his best friend, like they knew each other forever.
Like they knew him, yeah.
And it was all so fake. And I was like, you're not even talking to any of us. I know you just as well as he does. And you're not saying anything to me. You're not even saying hello to me. And it's because he plays for them. And it's like, we're just hockey players playing on different teams. Like, don't be fake.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
It was just my story about Wendell. I'm sure he's a really super nice guy. Maybe I did, I know these events are off, but it is just my story.
No, and everybody has their own story, and every time, and it's interesting because how many touch points that guy would have with different fans and different people coming up and saying, "Hey, do you remember this? Hey, do you remember that?" And then it's like would have to remember that, like all of these moments are as important to
Yeah, and
who you are.
who am I to think that he should remember a 12-year-old kid interviewing him in Saskatoon, right? I think
Well.
it's just the romance of the story. I guess I wanted him to remember it, but he's got so many other things to remember that's more important.
Well, yeah, it's like moving to a new town too, right? It's like there are times I had a guy say, "You've always seemed so polite," and then I've seen you at the rink, and you walk by me like you don't know me, and I'm like, well, I've met like hundreds to thousands of people, and I'm like, have you done anything memorable yet? How do I remember you out of the other ones? I'm like, I'm not trying to be a dick, but like, I didn't recognize you because everybody I've met is new. It's tough, but anywho, well, I don't have any notes, so I guess there's nothing to look at, is there? So you're in
No, I think
Czechia?
like
Where in Czechia are you?
I'm in a place called Zlín. It's about an hour southeast of Brno, 3 hours south of Prague. And I came here really for my stepsons. My wife is from here, and we both had successful careers in London, but just raising three boys in London was just becoming more and more challenging. And we would come here and visit their grandparents a couple of times a year, and they'd be like, "Oh, I wish we were in Zlín. I wish we were in Zlín." So, well, we decided just to pack everything up, and we moved here 6 months ago. We just bought a place, and we're just kind of putting the finishing touches on it now. And I'm happier than I ever have been. I have the most amazing partner. Like, she's my wife is just, yeah, since I've got married since the last time we spoke to. Got married in Soho, and my boys, like, we're all a family now. And for me, a lot of people would be thinking, "Oh, whoopee, Nick, you're married and you have some stepkids." But I was a guy who never thought I would be a dad. I was a guy whose ex-wife had a miscarriage, and that culminating in me going on such a bad drinking binge that I ended up in prison, and just that coming to terms with the fact that I wasn't going to be a dad. And then all of a sudden I met this amazing woman in lockdown, and she's like, "Oh, I have three boys, and they play hockey, and because I'm from the Czech Republic, and I got them involved in hockey." And I thought, And she told me about their history, and their biological dad wasn't the greatest guy, and I thought this was another moment, Wally, where I was like, "Oh, I'm a hero. I'm here to save the day and be the best stepdad in the world." But this is also a moment that I felt so uncomfortable with it, because all I knew about being a dad, which was what my dad taught me, which was discipline. And it made me feel so bad when I went around there that I was like, "Stop talking to your mom like that." And da 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 da. I was like trying to discipline them, and they just met me, and it made me feel so uncomfortable that I couldn't even urinate when I went into the house. I was so wrapped up with anxiety. And I actually reached out for help. And I said, help me to somebody. I need some help with this. And I did a lot of work and I went away and I did some writing and I talked to men who had been through similar things, and just something changed in me. And it just snapped. It was like, oh, I'm not here to save them. They're here to teach me. They're here to help me heal. We're here to be a family. And it's been the most beautiful, miraculous journey, part of my life. You know, I think being a stepdad has been the most challenging thing, probably as hard as getting sober and stuff, but it has been absolutely beautiful. So we moved here 6 months ago, Wal, and we've got a beautiful life. And I'm just at that point now where, like I said, that we had another suicide in the UK, and I'm just like, I got to do something. And it was just like all the stars aligned to create this support network for UK hockey players. And that's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm doing.
And that's what you should do. I still remember the day I thought of doing this, walking my dog middle of nowhere. And I'm listening to another Spit and Chicklets episode. And, you know, your whole life, you watch these other guys make the NHL, these other guys go do all this stuff. And you do your second league Germany, you do your UK league, and, you know, and then you play with, you go out and skate around here and someone says to you, like, if you didn't make it, like, who does? And I'm like, thanks. Did my best. And then, you know, it's all tough. And anyways, it takes everyone. But yeah, what hit home for me there was when you're talking about disciplining them and like whatever, and they're actually here to teach you. It's like when I came back here, and my kids are too young to be on like a real hockey team. They're just skating around pylons and shooting it on the net in different stations, and it's not a team. Getting my first team as a coach, getting the under 11 AE team, they call it, all the kids that had been cut from the rep team, and I got a bunch of kids that had never really been on teams before, maybe once, and I got to do that with them, and they saved me, and I got to be part of a team again, and I got to see these kids become hockey guys by the end of the year, and then we win the biggest game ever and make it to all Ontario's, and it was with a bunch of kids that had been cut, and it was like, I'm so back. Like, this is everything I need, is I see you guys becoming brothers for life. I see you guys being held accountable by each other and pushing each other to be better people and players. And I get to just sit back and watch it all happen and have as much fun as I can and make sure you guys are having as much fun as I can. And then the next year I get all wound up and I get all upset and I get, you know, like I get, and I don't get the coaching job to stay with those boys the next year. And I'm like, right wound. And I'm like, well, why don't I take the U9 House League girls with my daughter, who's on her first team ever. And I had the time of my life. I had one of my favorite hockey seasons ever. And those girls changed me and they helped me become a coach too. And they helped me learn how to be a coach, because hockey is not about, you have to be able to coach the people. And it's like, it doesn't matter what level you're at. It's like, now I've gotten 3 years of three totally different levels of hockey and different people and personalities, and to see how each season has gone is like, maybe this is my purpose. Maybe coaching this stuff is my purpose, because man, do I dive into the shit.
That's beautiful. You're probably right. You know, you always know when you found your purpose, because you wake up every day and you go, it's not a job. It's just, you wake up and you go, I'm really good at that. And purpose gives you some self-esteem. Purpose gives you some, like, this idea, like, I'm actually good at something. And it's not a paycheck. You do something because you're good at it. And this, it's an innate skill that you have.
Because you want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so many guys just aren't. You know, and I think that just through people can find, it doesn't have to be your job. That's the thing. It's like, purpose doesn't have to be your job. It can be coaching. It can be,
you can do it. You can know, do your purpose for free.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, And normally it is a position of actually giving something from yourself, because I find that that just, again, it builds some pride and some self-esteem in us, because that, you know, we live in a world that is not really kind to us. And it's like you're measured by the money in your bank account or the cars you drive rather than the impact you make on people, you know. And if we reversed it and we put value on the positive impact we made on people, man, you'd be Elon Musk, you know, and I'd be Jeff Bezos, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, but it, yeah, like
impact on people.
That is like, well, my dad, I guess, instilled in me though, was he made art. Me and my buddies friends for life, and the closest crew you could ever have from your small town. And now I'm doing it in a different small town, and I'm doing the best I can to make everybody brothers or sisters for life. And then when you see it happening, and you even see like the parents hugging each other when they were on a team with you 2 years ago, and they see each other and they're all part of your hockey family, and you see other families like hug each other and you're like, they were on my team.
Amazing. Lovely. You doing, Wally?
No, it's honestly as fun as it gets. And so now, you know, you see the banner behind, I have the best team in Ontario. I have everything you need to win it all. They know what to do. They know how hard to work. We have the talent. We have the compete. But we also have, they are themselves. I try to teach them, you guys are championship people. You need to be yourselves. You need to not worry about anything else but being yourselves out there and going out and doing it for each other. And man, when you see it happen, I can't wait for the All-Ontario Finals. I can't wait to watch them play. Because I know exactly what they're going to bring every single time, you know?
Man, get it streamed so we could watch it.
Oh, it's on YouTube.
Okay, beautiful.
Yeah, everybody should watch. It takes everybody to win. The boys would love thousands of people watching their All-Ontario Finals. So maybe I'll have to send it some stuff out. But
send me the link, I'll be in.
I think everybody finds their passion or purpose from their experiences. And you said it's being around people that have been through what you've been through. It's like when I moved to a small town, which I also think holds you accountable, makes you be a better person, because everybody in town knows who you are and what you're about, and everybody talks. And that's why I like living in a small town, is because I want to be held accountable, and I want everybody, if I'm a dickhead, you can tell people, bring the noise. But I'm not going to be a dickhead to you, because I know what a small town's like. I was raised in one. And it's the same in hockey. In hockey, it's a big world, but it's a small world, because you're all held accountable by how you treat your teammates, by how you listen to your coaches, by how you treat other people and fans. And everybody talks in the hockey world in a small town. And then you get to those big cities, man. You see the minor hockey. You see the parents in the arenas. Nobody's holding each other accountable. They're not a family. They're not a real team. Those are kids just out playing hockey, and they don't know what hockey's really about. And that is one of the most important things to me, is teaching these kids that when you are on each other's team, it ain't just on the ice. It is everywhere.
It is. And it's even when you stop playing. And that's the bit that the support network is for, right? Is like, let's keep things going beyond the ice.
And that's what I'm doing too, right? It's like, we're both doing similar things, and we could both do it our way. And it's like, I needed all my former teammates and their friends to make all this happen. And now you, after the game's over, also are putting this out there saying, we're right here. We're here to help.
Yeah. Yeah, and the purpose of coming on is to let people know that, like, if you played, like, this will grow outside of the UK, but right now, if you're listening to this and you played hockey in the UK, or if you know somebody who is, then Wally, I hope we can put some links in in your feed or whatever. But if
you'll,
I just say the
link,
show me
out of social media. I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Well, if you're listening to this, and I'll send you the links anyway. But the main link is if you go to my.re-tribe.com, sign up to that, and then there's the UK Ice Hockey Stick Together Tribe, and request to join it, and then if you like, I'll message you and I'll say, where do you play, you know, and where are you playing or whatever. And that just qualifies you for membership to get into that. So my.re-tribe.com.
And folks, get involved, right?
Come in.
What exactly do you do? Is it, I thought it was a Zoom call. Are you guys all on video so you can see each other?
Yeah. So basically it's all like a mini kind of social network. It's like a Facebook. You're frozen. You there? Yeah.
Now
it's
you're
like
back.
A mini it's Facebook. Like a,
I got you. We're here.
It's like Facebook. It's just, but it's not Facebook. We don't collect data. We don't, you know, it's private. And you can just post stuff in there, but also there's events that we put in, and these events will be workshops or sessions to help people with some tools, and they're going to be driven by the users. So the users are going to say, these are what the things that we're struggling with, or these are the things that we want to learn, and then we'll start putting that on. So I want to try. Our critical number is about 150 users. We want to get 150 users. We've got about 12 right now. So we just need, you know, I don't know the math. What is it? 128 more people. 138 more people.
Yeah. 138. Yeah.
We need 138 more people to sign up. So if you hear this, please get in touch, sign up and let's start. It's being built, but we need more hands on deck to create it for the users.
Takes people getting involved to get things going. Yeah. It's like you mentioned with our U13 YouTube stream, is you couldn't stream live unless you had, I think it was 50 subscribers, and we had to get to 50 subscribers, and we did. We nailed that.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So get involved, folks. And if you want to talk hockey or life with hockey people, get into Retribe, right?
That's it. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and if anybody is struggling, hockey player, whoever you are, I'm right here too. I don't care. I got time if you got time. If you need to message me, if you want to message me, I'm right here and I'll answer you. And if you want to talk to me in my shed, I'm right here too. You know?
Beautiful. I want to come on again one day and we'll give you another update, okay?
Absolutely. Once you get this thing built up and it's a...
Yeah, and
helping people is fun. It being nice is nice, and you can change people's lives just by being a nice person than worrying about yourself, right?
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for coming on again and the update. Thanks, and I'm sure this will be a great success because a lot of people do need it. A lot of hockey guys need it when they get out of the game, and not a lot of us. We'll say anything to anybody about nothing, similar to what I did. But it's better to talk. Coming out to my shed and talking hockey with people. Those first couple months I was doing it, man, I could feel the weight coming off my shoulders. I could feel it dropping. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then my weight started dropping. And then all of a sudden I looked like the just a bit fat hockey player I used to be, and I didn't even have to exercise. Depression weights. It's a thing, folks.
Yeah. I was been there.
Fat as heck. But thank you so much. What was your hockey nickname? Pretty Boy, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah. It was a Simsy special.
Oh dear, we won't even talk about him today. They did just win. Way to go, Simsy. And this has been another episode of Two Ales and Hockey Tales with Pretty Boy and Wally.
Two Ales and Hockey Tales with Wally. For the fans, to the players, living their hockey dream. Two Ales and Hockey Tales with Wally. Kim Carden, Sidoruski, and everywhere in between. Oh, I hope you don't mind if I introduce you to another shed guy. I'm remember, kids. When it is fun. Two Ales and Hockey Tales with Wally. Two Ales and Hockey Tales with Wally. Two Ales and Hockey Tales with Wally. Some chocolate, please.